Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Over 1,800 lives were lost, the deadliest maritime disaster in America. But other big headlines to compete with, no book deal and no blockbuster film to tell the story. Chances are you've never heard of the sinking of the Sultana. Being left out of the history books can be a result of bad timing, the wrong place at the wrong time, and even having a name that's hard to rhyme with. Christopher Klein is a freelance writer and author, and he joins us to unearth the reasons behind forgotten history. We found his article, Eight Reasons We Forget Some Historical Events, at the Boston Globe. Welcome to Word of Mouth, Christopher.
Thank you, Virginia.
Thanks for coming in. And tell us more about the Sultana tragedy.
So this happens a couple weeks after the surrender of Robert E. Lee at Appomattox. And you have Union troops who fought in the battlefields down south, many of them who were also prisoners of war at Andersonville and Cahaba. And they survived the battles. They survived the POW camps. And now they're ready to go home. And they board the steamboat to take them up the Mississippi River from Vicksburg, Mississippi, up to Illinois. And it was pretty common at that time to have private steamboat operators to transport troops, and they were paid per head. So the owner and the captain of the Sultana was getting paid $5 a head for every man he put on board, $10 for an officer. And even though he was licensed for 376 passengers, he put 2,400 passengers on the Sultana. Mm. And he knew he had a leaky boiler that could be a problem too, but he didn't want to risk not getting his payday, so he told everyone to just patch the boilers. And the overloaded ship makes its way up the Mississippi River, and in the middle of the night on April 27, 1865, three of the boilers explode, and of the 2,400 men on board, 1,800 of them are suspected to have died in this tragedy.
Absolutely grisly explosion, too, from the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, there are hundreds who died instantly just from the force of the explosion. And then it turns the steamboat into a floating inferno. And you have, back in those days, not many people know how to swim. The Mississippi River is swollen at flood stages and freezing. And people had basically make the decision they wanted to die by burning aboard the ship or die by drowning.
Absolute tragedy, but we hear so little about it.
Right.
Is it just because there was no film like the Titanic made about it?
That's part of the reason. And what really buries the Sultana in our collective memory is it's really a victim of poor timing. It happens the day after John Wilkes Booth is cornered and shot in a barn in Virginia. The body of Abraham Lincoln is still making its way across the country to its final resting place in Springfield, Illinois. There are still Civil War generals who are surrendering their troops out on the field. So it's sort of a victim of very busy news time. And then also, you know, the country was numb at that point. Whereas today, you know, 1,800 people die, of course, it's going to be just huge news. But in the Civil War, when you had 600,000 soldiers who died, you know, another 1,800 was sort of just a blip on the radar.
I'm thinking about bad timing. Remember the fertilizer explosion in Texas?
That's right.
At just about the same time, maybe a day or two after the Boston bombing.
That's right. Yep.
Completely wiped off of the headlines. Well, but this story does have, it has greed, you know, it has tragedy, it has a sense of heroism. Isn't that a kind of narrative that we would want to remember?
You know, I think that there are a lot of instructive lessons that are in there that would make for a very interesting story. And there have been a number of authors who have written books about it, but it just doesn't have the same connection as the Titanic does in our mind, because the Titanic is just this classic story. And, you know, that's what we remember, that story part of history. You have this mighty ship that is
feat of engineering, right?
Yeah, even the name Titanic, you know, it's you couldn't make that up. And it's a story about hubris and how the mighty will fall. And it has those classic storylines to go back to the days, you know, of the Odyssey. And the Titanic, of course, the victims were rich and famous. And, you know, people tend to gravitate to those kinds of stories as opposed to the men who were the soldiers on the Sultana.
Right. How about location? I mean, this is in the middle of the Mississippi River. It's not like Gettysburg. There's a battlefield. Does location make a difference in whether or not?
Location makes a big difference. And events that happen in major media centers are going to be remembered a lot more than an event such as Sultana, which took place outside Mississippi, you know, sort of on the further reaches of where most of America was at that time. So that definitely plays a lot into it. And you will find in the course of history, you're going to remember these events that happen in big metropolitan areas. And a great example is we all remember the Great Chicago Fire, October 6, 1871. Wasn't even the deadliest fire that night. Just 250 miles to the north, there was a fire roaring through the lumber towns of Wisconsin, killed 10 times as many people as in Chicago. In fact, when they go to phone the governor to tell him about the fire, he's not there. He's in Chicago helping with the relief efforts. You know, we all have Mrs. O'Leary's cow sort of stuck in our collective mythological memories. But it, as I said, it wasn't even the deadliest fire that night.
Well, there are a lot of names that get sort of attached to these histories. Of course, Paul Revere. Why was Paul Revere remembered while others were not?
Well, Paul Revere basically got the biggest PR coup of his life 40 years after he died. And that was when Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. And Longfellow's poem botched a lot of the history. But it was a very memorable poem that school children were taught, and that's sort of the version of history that they remembered. The biggest person who gets left in history is the other writer that night, William Dawes. And you can make the argument that William Dawes had a tougher task than Paul Revere did on the night of April 18th, 1775, whereas Revere was crossing the water to get to Lexington and Concord, William Dawes had to get past the British guards by land. And he was able to sneak past those British guards and had a longer route to take to get out to Lexington and Concord. So he was just as much of a patriot hero as Revere was, yet we don't really remember him as much as Paul Revere.
Why do we remember some historical events and others are lost to the dustbin, as they say? Well, we're speaking with the writer Christopher Klein. He has come up with 8 reasons why we forget some historical events. A pretty instructive way to look at history going forward. It's also who we choose to remember. You write about Ona Judge and her legacy here in New Hampshire, barely remembered. Now, who was she and why do you think we've chosen not to celebrate her?
So Ona Judge is a slave living in Philadelphia in the 1790s, and she is about 20 years old, and she fled her master's house, gets on a boat and sails to Portsmouth and mixes in with the communities up here in New Hampshire. But what makes it notable is who her master was. And her master was George Washington, Martha Washington. And the house that she had left was the president's house. And she settled up here, and under the fugitive slave law that George Washington had signed into law, she could be brought back to Philadelphia to her owners. And the president did try to get some of his operatives to get her to come back to Philadelphia, but was unsuccessful in doing so. And I came across this story when I was reading this book by Andrew Carroll. It was called Here Is Where, and he was taking a look at these sort of forgotten historical tales, these unmarked historical sites, and he told this story about Ona Judge, and she lived in Greenland, New Hampshire, and that's where she died, and she's buried there. But the plot of her house, her gravesite, is basically unmarked. It's out in the middle of the woods. And, you know, he raised the question, why this person who really embodies the motto of the Grant Estate, you know, live free or die, why isn't she remembered as much? And part of it is, you know, we know sort of that George Washington was a slaveholder, but we really don't want to think too hard about it, right? You know, it's one of these aspects that we build up our heroes and we don't necessarily want to see some of these flaws that in real ways make them human or ways for us to connect with them. But we put them on these mythological pedestals and we don't want to learn these stories necessarily that show some of the sides that we don't want to see about them.
Right. Accuracy is not always the province of history. Rosa Parks, for example, was not the first woman of color to say, I do not want to ride in the back of the bus. Who was Claudette Colvin and why didn't she make the cut as the hero of the civil rights movement?
So she is a 15-year-old girl. And she is the first African-American to be arrested for not giving up her seat on the bus. The NAACP was looking to bring a test case, and they dug a little bit more into Claudette's backstory. but she had one aspect to her that the NAACP didn't think would present a great image, and that she was pregnant. She's an unwed prospective mother. And that did not fit the image of who they wanted to put out in front to be the face of this civil rights case. So they decide not to use Claudette. Rosa Parks, a few months later, she's arrested on the bus, and she fits more of the type, the more dignified older woman. She works as a seamstress at the department store. She's the face that they want to put out in front. So even though she's not the first person to be arrested, she is the person that we remember in history.
So what are the types of stories that we tend to keep out of our history books? Those unpleasant, they remind us of something we don't want to see. It's like, I don't know, it's like retrofitting history to suit our tastes.
Yeah, I mean, we have this tendency to whitewash history. As I said, we want to have these heroes that we put up front. And that also means that we tend to forget about history that don't have any natural leaders to them. One of the historians I spoke to for this piece, Ray Raphael, he makes a point that grassroots movements tend to get lost in history because by their nature, they do not have charismatic leaders. And he was talking even about Shays' Rebellion that happened in the early years of the Republic. And Daniel Shays was hardly even involved in the movement. But we put Daniel Shays into this leadership position that he never had. And we remember Shays' Rebellion because we remember Daniel Shay. And there was no Daniel Shay even put there by history. We probably wouldn't remember it as much. So we remember those stories that have heroes. We remember those stories that glorify and extol those virtues that we want to feel, not only about the historical figures, but about ourselves as well. And there's stories that are out there that don't necessarily present the image that we want to have about ourselves, and we might forget them.
How can we remedy our collective forgetfulness?
I think what we need to do is we need to read about history, okay? I mean, these stories that I came across are ones that I never learned in school. And I think just the more you expose yourself to history, the more that you read about it, you're going to come across even these little kernels of information. We need to put out historical markers. We need to have these public events, commemorations, those things that lend ourselves into the collective memory. And that's how we build memories for future generations as well. I mean, there's a lot of value to a field trip. And kids who go on field trips to these historical places, that's where they get their, that's where they learn these stories. And the more that we can expose children to these stories, then we can sort of resuscitate some of these stories that have been lost to history.
Christopher Klein, freelance writer and author, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
We found Christopher's piece, 8 Reasons We Forget Some Historical Events, at the Boston Globe, and you can learn more about the history we left behind by reading his article. That's at wordofmouthradio.org.